You ever feel like you need a cheat code for understanding big ideas?
Totally.
Like
Yeah.
there's this huge world of thought and you just want the key insights without, reading everything.
Exactly. Get right to the heart of it.
Well, that's what we're doing today. We're diving into the work of Herman Dewey Weird. He's a pretty major figure in 20th century reform thinking.
Right, sort of a specific flavor of Christian philosophy, you could say, born in 1894.
And his ideas really developed alongside his brother-in-law, Vollenhoven, a key partnership there.
Definitely. And what's interesting from the get-go is the mix of influences on him. His dad was very Popperian, God's sovereignty over all of life. But his mother's side had this emphasis on, well, a really personal piety influenced by Colebrooke.
So you get this blend of the big picture, like cosmic view, and deep personal faith.
Yeah, and that combination really shapes his later thought, I think.
And like Vollenhoven, he went through the religious schools and, well, he was initially a bit disappointed, right?
Felt the main university, the VU, wasn't fully developing a truly consistent Calvinistic worldview yet.
And interestingly, both he and Vollenhoven were kind of drawn to mystical ideas early on, Fertebrand Eden's writings.
Yeah, there's some debate about what kind of mysticism, maybe echoes of thinkers like Franz von Baader even, but it shows this early searching, doesn't it?
Definitely, something beyond just the purely rational.
A reminder that intellectual journeys can have, well, unexpected starting points.
Okay, so a big moment was his doctoral thesis in 1917 on the Dutch cabinet.
Right, and that seems to have really highlighted for him the lack of a solid philosophical grounding in legal theory at the time.
Which pushed him towards grappling with those neo-Kantian schools, Marburg, Baden.
People like Cohen, Stammler, Cassirer, Kelsen, Windelband, Rickert.
Yeah, all those guys.
Yeah.
He was looking for a distinctly Christian way to think about law, not just borrowing their frameworks.
Because he felt those prevailing philosophies just didn't properly account for, a Christian view of creation and God's law as foundational.
And this is where Vollenhoven comes back in strongly, especially when they were both working in The Hague.
That's right. There's this letter from Dewey Weird around 1920 showing real excitement about Vollenhoven's ideas.
Specifically about how our knowledge reflects the diversity of reality itself.
Exactly. That partnership was clearly a catalyst because by 1922, they have this breakthrough, or what they saw as
The
one,
modalities.
the modalities. Yeah. Think of them as these fundamental aspects or ways of being of reality, like the numerical, the spatial, the physical, the organic, the psychical, logical, historical, all the way up.
Each with its own kind of irreducible character and laws.
It was their philosophical expansion of Kuiper's sphere sovereignty idea, taking it beyond just a social vision.
Right, giving it deeper roots. Okay, so 1922, he gets appointed at the Kuiper Foundation.
And he later said he already had a kind of basic sketch of his philosophy then, laid it out in a work called Cosmos and Logos.
Which became pretty central to his epistemology, how he thought about knowledge.
Yeah. They actually planned to collaborate on it, he and Vollenhoven, but Vollenhoven got sick, and there were maybe some slight differences in emphasis even then.
Interesting. Shows even close collaborators have their own nuances.
For sure.
Now, a really key piece for Dewey Weird is the heart.
Ah, yes, the heart. Crucial.
As the absolute center, the keystone of how we know things, how we relate to God and the world, he apparently had a realization reading Kuiper after joining the foundation.
Right. He saw it as really different from older views, like medieval scholasticism, where the heart might be seen more as just, the seat of emotions or will, separate from intellect.
For Dewey Weird, it was deeper. The religious root, the core of our being that directs everything.
Exactly. It's not just about intellectual assent, it's about the fundamental orientation of your whole person.
And working there, in Kuiper's old study, no less, he also had to engage directly with other Christian political viewpoints.
Like the Christian Democrats, who were influenced by Thomism, Thomas Aquinas.
And the Christian Historical Party, who were more focused on, well, historical development and tradition, historicism.
So he's carving out a specifically Calvinistic political philosophy against those backdrops. Pope Leo XIII's Attorney Patris in 1879 had really boosted Thomism, so that was a major dialogue partner.
Okay, so looking at Thomism and natural law, the idea of universal moral principles we can figure out through reason, Dewey Weird had some criticisms, right?
He did. He worried about a potential tension between divine causality and genuine human freedom.
And also that classic nature grace distinction. He felt it could lead to a kind of dualism, separating the natural order from God's direct lordship and grace.
Yeah, and implications for the state and church too, potentially blurring their distinct God-given roles if the state is seen as purely natural and the church purely grace.
He wanted to maintain the integrity of each sphere under God.
Precisely.
Then with historicism, the focus on historical change.
His critique there was that it could overemphasize the changeability of norms, maybe losing sight of the underlying constancy, the God-given structure.
Risking making human cultural formation sort of.
Yeah.
Absolutizing the historical aspect or modality itself.
Right. He wanted to affirm that while laws and norms get positivized, you know, fleshed out in specific times and places, they still relate back to universal creational ordinances from God.
So balancing constancy and development.
Exactly. Acknowledging historical reality without making it the ultimate source of meaning or norms.
Okay, so stepping back a bit. Initially, reacting against those Neo-Kantians who maybe overplayed the mind's role.
Right, the idealist tendencies.
He and Vollenhoven moved towards something like critical realism.
Yeah, sometimes called transcendental realism early on, emphasizing that reality is, well, real. It exists independently of our minds thinking about it. Anna Nima was an influence there, too.
Affirming the objectivity of God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 1923, maybe a year after the modalities, comes this idea of the philosophy of the cosmonomic idea.
Or the law idea, yeah. Right. Later, he often called it the transcendental ground idea.
Sounds pretty foundational.
It is. It's sort of the architectonic principle, the basic religiously determined presupposition that shapes a whole philosophical system. It provides the ultimate coherence. Maybe some influence from Vollenhoven's ideas about intuition there, too.
The core idea that structures everything else.
You got it. The ultimate starting point.
Wow. Okay, so as you've listened to all this, maybe think about this. What are the fundamental assumptions you bring to the table when you think about the world, about knowledge?
Yeah, what's your ground idea, so to speak?
Dewey Weird's work really pushes us, doesn't it, to consider those deep, often unstated, maybe even religious commitments that actually shape how different philosophies and maybe even our own thinking understand everything.
It gives you a different lens for looking at intellectual history, for sure. A deeper, more critical way to see the foundations.